Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're focusing our attention on a really specific corner of the Canadian healthcare puzzle, Prince Edward Island. Our source material is a remarkably detailed, and I have to say, highly critical series of recent editorials from Business Edge.
And they take a very fiscally sober, almost uncompromising look at the whole system.
Exactly. We're digging into the structural, bureaucratic, and, the financial strain that taxpayers there are really feeling right now.
And our mission today is to take these sources and unpack what they're calling a serious crossroads.
A crossroads, yeah.
The central argument here isn't just that PEI's health system is struggling, it's that it's expanding on fronts that are, just financially unsustainable. We're talking cost, bureaucracy, and even political ambition.
So we need to understand the nuts and bolts of the operational failures that are causing this. We
Exactly.
have to start with the numbers because they immediately tell you this is a crisis, not just a challenge.
They really do.
Historically, PEI's healthcare spending would climb maybe 5 to 8% a year, which is a lot, but manageable.
Painful but manageable, right?
But the recent data shows spending has jumped over 14%.
14.
It's just an explosion.
And it's not just a line item on a budget. I mean, it's an economic force multiplier in reverse.
What do you mean by that?
That 14% jump means health services now consume a whopping 34% of the entire provincial budget.
A third of everything.
Over a third. And remember, that budget is already running an $85 million deficit. So when one service eats up that much of your spend while you're bleeding red ink,
Yeah.
the sources are right. It's not sustainable. It's not even rational.
It's an economic anchor.
Absolutely.
Okay, so if the finances are that dire, we have to look at the political decisions that drove it. For decades, PEI politics had these sacred three pillars.
Right. Health, education, and infrastructure.
They always got priority. Voters expected action.
But that whole environment has been completely overwhelmed. Today you have economic security, housing affordability, the environment.
All competing for the same dollars.
Fiercely competing. So instead of one or two clear priorities, governments feel pressure to deliver everywhere at once. And you stretch that resource pool until it just snaps.
And into that environment steps the former premier, Dennis King, who really staked his legacy on healthcare reform.
He did. And the government moved fast. I mean, reconstituting health PEI leadership, launching a medical
That
school.
lightning speed, as the source
That's
says.
exactly. And opening all those community-based care hubs. On the surface, it sounds like decisive leadership.
It does. It sounds like you're getting things done.
But the editorials argue that speed is not always a virtue. And this is, a crucial point of their critique. The speed might have prioritized visibility over actual stability.
How does that translate into damage on the ground?
Well, the argument is that the rapid action created a kind of structural debt. They suggest the government expanded the bureaucracy faster than it hired frontline staff. They pushed a brand new medical school without stabilizing the system the graduates would eventually work in.
Yeah.
And they relied on these short-term salary bonuses.
Which just can't compete with what other provinces are offering.
Not at all. Not against Nova Scotia or Alberta.
So here's the line that really drives it home for me. The uncomfortable truth, according to the sources, is that some of this recent activity reads like political theater dressed up as reform.
Ouch.
It's ribbon cutting, it gets attention, but it doesn't fix the core decay.
And that's the disconnect. Politicians get credit for starting things, but the system is suffering because it expanded without the capacity to support it. And to really get the scale of this, you have to look at the history.
All built on consolidation.
Entirely.
Yep.
The big shift started way back in 1969 when the government took over the Charlottetown Hospital. Then the QEH, the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, opened in 82.
But the big one was Health PEI.
Yes, 2010, the creation of a single centralized health authority.
And the philosophy on paper was beautiful. One island health system, the right care at the right place. It was all about efficiency.
It was.
So where did the efficiency dissolve into bloat?
Well, the analysis says that consolidation mutated into an increasingly heavy administrative apparatus.
More managers.
More managers, more committees, more coordination meetings, layers of reporting that just weren't there before. It's that natural growth of bureaucracy,
Right.
where coordination demands more coordinators.
And that increases cost without increasing care.
Precisely. And that leads to this critical mismatch we see everywhere.
The administrative side gets heavier, while the frontline staff nurses, LPNs, doctors, paramedics, they're left carrying a workload that just keeps expanding.
Yes, that mismatch is the core problem. It's straining finances, operations, and frankly, public trust.
Which brings us right to the human resources paradox.
The blunt truth is that PEI's biggest problem is people. The lack of them, the burnout of the ones they have, and the inability to keep them.
The system is just chronically understaffed.
And structurally misaligned.
And the government knows this. They're trying to invest. The budget has, what, $7.1 million for more doctors?
$6.2 million for recruitment, another $2.2 million for training.
But the critique is that you're trying to staff a 2025 system with a 2010 organizational model.
And that model is failing to hold on to people. They talk about the futility of this compensation arms race.
A $10,000 bonus is nice, but...
it's a Band-Aid. When Nova Scotia's offering $30,000 more a year in base salary, and Alberta might double that, PEI just can't compete on money alone. The math doesn't work.
So they have to rely on culture, on quality of life. But the sources say that's being eroded by what they call the administrative paradox.
Yes. The paradox is that the bureaucracy is supposed to support the front line. But here, it's too layered, too slow, and just disconnected from the reality of clinical care.
So what does that look like day to day?
It's constant internal movement. Roles shift, managers change every 2 weeks, accountability gets diluted, frontline staff just get exhausted having to re-explain basic processes or wait months for a simple approval.
And this isn't just a feeling. The analysis cites a Guardian article pointing out that administrative hiring went up by 35% in the last 2 years.
35%. That number should shock any taxpayer.
That's the mechanism of the financial bleed out.
Exactly. You're paying more people to manage processes instead of more people to deliver care. And this takes us right into operational inefficiency.
The everything everywhere model.
Right. The system tries to satisfy every local demand, often because of political pressure.
We need a CT scanner in our town.
You got it.
Uh-huh.
And the result is scattered, underutilized services, and a ton of duplication. It pulls specialized staff away from where they could be used most efficiently.
The sources point to the two big hospitals, QEH in Charlottetown and PCH in Summerside. They're carrying way too much of the burden.
Which is why the rural facilities are underused and why you see those constant disruptive ER closures from staff shortages. Wow. It's all connected.
And the communications infrastructure is, what, crippling?
It's a mess. A mix of paper records and inconsistent electronic health record adoption. It creates delays, errors.
Mm.
It's just baffling. For an island that size, they should have been a leader in unified EHRs a decade ago.
And the ER congestion. The source makes a fascinating point here.
Oh, yeah. This is key.
It's not because islanders are overusing them. It's because there's not enough primary care access. If you can't get a family doctor, the ER is your only option.
It becomes the default. The system is failing upstream. But the solutions they propose are actually pretty practical.
Okay. So what can be done?
Well, first, expand targeted services in rural hospitals. Put high-quality diagnostics or low-risk procedures out there to take the pressure off QEH and PCH.
And they stress the need for true collaborative care models.
Absolutely. The family doctor cannot be the sole carrier of this burden anymore. You need nurses, pharmacists, mental health professionals all integrated into the practice.
And technology has to be part of this.
It's non-negotiable. A unified EHR is step one. But beyond that, they see PEI as perfectly sized to be a beta test site for hybrid health, telemedicine, remote diagnostics.
They even mention specific platforms like LaborMind to use data to manage patient flow.
Right, predictive analytics to reduce bottlenecks. It's all about being agile. If you can't win on scale or money, you have to win on innovation.
But looking ahead to 2040, the challenges are huge.
Unavoidable. First, the gray tsunami. 30% of the population will soon be over 65. That's a guaranteed massive increase in demand for complex care.
And costs will just keep rising faster than revenue.
Indefinitely.
Yeah.
Especially as that competition for staff just gets more intense.
But the sources do provide a path forward. 6 key recommendations to turn this into an opportunity.
Yeah, to become a model, not a cautionary tale. The first is revolutionary. Adopt AI aggressively.
But they're very clear. AI should replace bureaucracy, not clinicians.
Right. Use it for diagnosis, monitoring, admin automation, free up clinical time.
Second, shift the center of care away from hospitals. Invest heavily in home and community care. Make the hospital the last resort.
Third is the workforce pipeline. And they tie this directly to the new medical school. A commitment of service should be a prerequisite.
Right now, there's no guarantee the graduates will even stay on the island.
Which defeats the purpose of the investment. Number four is leveraging public-private partnerships.
But for modernization, not privatization, to get tech implemented outside the slow bureaucratic bubble.
Exactly. Number five is funding preventative care like it's the most important thing, because it is. Every dollar spent there saves $3 to $4 later.
The highest yield investment you can make. And finally, number six.
Shift to outcome-based funding. Stop rewarding systems for just doing more stuff. Start rewarding them for actually making islanders healthier.
That forces accountability on quality, not just volume.
The final synthesis of all this is really striking. PEI is battling health inflation. Cost, bureaucracy, and political ambition are all expanding faster than the system's capacity to deliver.
So the choice the analysis presents is stark. PCI can use its small size to become the most innovative small healthcare system in Canada,
or it can become the most expensive failed one.
Success demands real reform, not just well-intended political gestures.
And this raises a really important question for you, the listener, to think about. The analysis points out this massive retention problem. They might bring in 20 new doctors, but lose 15.
So since the province is fiscally locked out of winning the compensation arms race, the question is this. What non-financial, culture-based reforms like empowering local teams with more autonomy or finally providing real mental health support, what must be prioritized to actually keep people there and stop the manageable factors that are causing good, loyal staff to just pack up and leave?